Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 85, Elusive Green. Sunday, August 9th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from the rehearsal space of Bovine Social Club. Today's episode includes the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, off the shelf, yarn lover at large, and so forth. Thank you so much for all of your comments and interaction on social media and our Ravelry thread. There have been a few new folks joining the Ravelry thread over the past week. Welcome, and feel free to introduce yourself on the introductions board. I tend to give a shout out hello to anyone who has introduce themselves either in a personal message or on Ravelry in the introductions thread or even with a comment on the show notes. And I do tend to link things that I talk about in the show notes. Sometimes they are verbose and sometimes they are a bit pared down with just a few photos and maybe links of things that I mention. It kind of depends on how busy I am and how much time I have to devote to putting the podcast together. Coming up on 2 years of the Yarns at Yin Hu podcast, I began this podcast adventure in mid-August of 2013. And the first year that I worked on the podcast, I knew that I would not be successful in making the commitment to podcast every week. But I committed myself to 45 episodes, and I did reach that goal. I think I extended a little bit beyond that goal. This year, my goal has been to podcast about 3 times a month, or 36 episodes for the year. And if I'm able to stick to schedule, my next episode will be number 36 for the year and falling about the time of the podiversary. I'm not sure of the exact day. It's been such a wonderful journey starting this podcast, and I haven't been involved in the fiber arts for very long. Those of you who haven't been listening to the podcast for too long probably haven't heard my knitting story, but I began with crochet about, say we're getting on 6 years now. I took a staff development course at the school where I work called Crochet for Stress Relief. It was taught by our assistant superintendent, and it generated a lot of interest among the staff for the fiber arts. And some folks decided that they really weren't suited for the fiber arts, and others of us have continued on. And I'm certainly one of the folks who has just become enamored. And after crochet, I watched some videos and began knitting because there was this beautiful Entrelac scarf in lovely neural yarn, and I just had to have it, and I didn't know enough about knitting to realize that knitting Entrelac is very difficult. So to me, it wasn't difficult. It was just knitting. It was just learning how to knit. And after that, I started knitting a lot more because I just found that there's a little more support for knitting, more patterns available, tutorials, and also things that are more unisex, I suppose, in their design. I tend not to go for things that are extraordinarily lacy or delicate. And I also like to make things for men, so knitting seemed to fit the bill. And from there, you know, just starting with spinning, I took a class and learned how to use a spinning wheel, bought a spinning wheel. I've done a lot of drop spindling lately. And then Santa brought me a sewing machine just this past Christmas. And I have a desire to have maybe not a completely hand-sewn wardrobe, but I would like to work to the point where the majority of things that I wear are things that I have made. It's deeply satisfying. I really enjoy it. I like spending the amount of time it takes, like the investment to really learn something and make something. And this journey along with the podcast has just really done wonders for me and the outlook I have to many different facets of my life. So I want to thank everyone who has come along on this journey with me. And I hope that those of you who have been listening from the very early days celebrate with me the podiversary of the Yarns at Yin Hu podcast. This past week, I have completed Blom, which is a shawl design by Melody of the Bee Mandarines podcast. It's a beautiful shawl design, and I love the knitting of it. I used some incredible gift yarn in this amazing tonal purple. The yarn was from Yarns to Inspire in the Serenity base, and the color is called Bubblicious. Oh, it was really lovely. And this was a gift from my pen pal, Fernanda. I used US size 6 needles, and this yarn sort of bordered between a fingering weight and a sport weight. I had well over 600 yards, and so I decided that I would extend the shawl, and I did extend it by an additional repeat. I love the beautiful little flower stitch, and Melody has an excellent tutorial for how to complete the stitch. And knitting on the shawl just was really a dream. I decided that I would alter the picot bind off a little bit. I tend not to like giant picot baubles on the end of a shawl. I wanted something a little more understated, and I wanted to add beads as well. So I found a tutorial for a picot bind off that was, had a much lower profile, and applied the beads with a crochet hook. And there are three sections to the Blom shawl. The right and left panels are just knit in stockinette stitch. They're very plain. And then, you know, the party is really happening in the center of the shawl, where it starts with some yarn overs and then the beautiful flower stitch pattern. So when I did the picot bind off, I added beads at different rates. On the side panels, I added them more frequently. And then in the center panel, I added the beads, I think, every 6 stitches I would bind off, whereas on the side panels, I added them every 4 stitches. So the effect of the border is lovely. The shawl has a little bit of an odd shape at the top. I guess I wanted it to be more of a crescent, flat across the top. I wanted to be able to wrap it more securely around me. I guess I was anticipating that it would be a bigger shawl than it has turned out to be because of the yardage that I used. I might try blocking it again and more aggressively, although I'm reluctant to stretch it out. It's beautiful wrapped around the neck. It looks lovely. And the beads are just, I think, a really nice touch. But I just have this dream, and it was one of my goals for the summer to knit a big shawl. And this is just, I don't know, it's just escaping me. Like, No matter what I do or how much yarn I use, I don't seem to come out with a big shawl. That could be partially my aversion to lacy designs, because if there were more holes in the shawl, my yarn would go further, I think. But I really like something that is more subtle and without the lace. And I think I need to come to terms with the fact that this will mean using maybe 800 or 900 yards for a shawl rather than 500 to 600 yards for a shawl. So I continue. I don't know if this qualifies as, you know, summoning my inner Shackleton or not. I've been toying around with this idea. Sarah of the Fiber Trek podcast talked about in her most recent video episode that she wants to have this Shackleton knit along where you know, go on this trek to knit the thing that sort of eludes you. I don't know how challenging it is just to knit more yardage rather than knit a complicated pattern. But definitely the big shawl has eluded me this summer. The summer isn't over, so I could give it another go and see if I could get a big shawl out of it. I'll have to keep thinking about that. The front porch. I have cast on for the Asymmetrical, an asymmetrical craft along that began on August 1st and continues until September 30th. I invite you to join in and participate. There's still plenty of time to cast on for this craft along, and you may crochet, knit, weave, sew, and we're making asymmetrical garments or accessories over the course of this 2 months. It may be that I complete more than one project, but the one I've cast on and I hope to complete by Friday is the Folded Lace Tank, a pattern by Bristol Ivy. I'm knitting this in a silk linen blend, and though the pattern calls for US size 6 needles, I just felt that this was immense knitting it on size 5s. I think I started with size 5s. And I just sort of knit a little bit of a swatch to see. So I dropped down to a size 4. And after row 17, I decided that was still too big. And I'm knitting it now on a US size 3. And I have committed to this needle size. So I'm not exactly sure how this will all turn out, but that's the size that this garment will be. It is not meant to be fitted. However, I don't want it to be too loose. And in the pattern description, Bristol Ivy mentions that her inspiration for this design is a Greek garment called a chiton, which is spelled C-H-I-T-O-N. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Which is, you know, the style of garment with a lot of fold and drape. So there are 3 narrow lace panels running along the left side of the garment, and then there are folds made at the shoulder seam so that the lace is gradually revealed down the length of the garment. So at the shoulder, maybe near the bust, you might not see the lace at all. It's sort of hiding within the garment. But then as the fabric drapes toward the waist, you see this lace pattern revealed. And the silk linen blend feels a little bit like cotton to knit. It's in a gorgeous lilac color. And I believe there's a little bit of like silk, not an oil, but maybe some individual strands of sari silk. In the blend, the colorway is lupin, which is a lovely lavender. And then there are just little pops of yellow, red, and blue throughout the yarn. has a nice texture. It's a little bit thicker than I would imagine it knits up, but that could be because I'm knitting it on a size 3 needle, so it's a little bit more dense, the fabric. But it has a, you know, a lovely drape to it, and it does have a bit of memory, so you can sort of, not like pure linen where you just stretch it out and it stays stretched out. This will spring back a little bit. I'm enjoying the knitting. I think it's a tall order to complete this garment by the end of Stash Dash, but I'm putting all of my eggs in one basket, as they say. And even though I only have, I think, just under 300 yards to go for my 5K goal for Stash Dash, this is the only thing that I'm actively working on. So if I want to complete my Stash Dash goal, I really need to complete this garment within a week. So we shall see. I'll be posting photos on Instagram of my progress, and I'll let you know in the next podcast whether I reached my goal. Off the shelf. I've received some feedback from listeners that even those of you who are not reading along enjoy hearing about the read-along title, Color, A Natural History of the Palette by Victoria Finlay. This is a summer read-along, and this week we've been in the green chapter. So I thought I'd share a little bit about addressing this issue of color for textiles, as opposed to color for pigments and paintings. I think it seems clear to me that the author's initial interest in color had to do with color for painting and artwork. But often in her travels and in her research, she finds information, and then in the text she addresses color and its use as a dye for textiles. And that is what is of particular interest to me, since in my work at the Fibercraft Studio, where I'm engaged in a year-long sheep to shawl class, and I'm learning about Waldorf theory and application of handwork in education, we're experimenting with plant dyes and different kinds of natural dyes. And so whenever Finlay addresses dyes and textiles, I become even more interested. She mentions in this chapter on green, there's a lot of talk about mysterious green and green being this elusive color to capture. And for both artists and just for, you know, average people who are looking to clothe themselves with some sort of color, green is very attractive. Artists in painting, landscapes, and the natural world, you know, pretty much everything that we see around us that isn't water or sky is some shade of green, but it's a very difficult color to produce in pigment. Even though everything is green, it doesn't make green. So it's one of the, you know, a strange paradox of the universe, I suppose. So in this chapter, she writes, if artists had problems with greens, then the situation for dyers was even worse. Green had never been an easy color for them, and it tended to require them dipping the cloth into two vats, a blue one and a yellow one. Together with the problem of adding mordants and getting the right temperatures and concentrations, all this dipping meant that the chance of getting the same shade twice was fairly low. And when dyers did manage to achieve some kind of consistency, it was highly prized. The legends of Robin Hood and his merry men, for example, describe them as wearing Lincoln green. I had always imagined it to be for camouflage, but the truth is that they were wearing it to show off. The green cloth was the pride of Lincoln, made of woad, a blue plant, and weld, a yellow one. It was also called gaudy green, and it was expensive. Wearing it was a way for the legendary bandit to laugh at his Nottingham rivals and show how he was stealing from the rich to clothe the poor. We see another example of the problems of greens in the experience of the English designer William Morris. In the 1860s, Morris decided to help revive medieval textile arts, and in order to give ordinary people the sense of living in a medieval castle, he created wallpapers that looked like antique tapestries. His papers were mostly blue with a little red, just like the old tapestries Morris had admired. But if he was trying to be authentic, he had made a mistake. In the Middle Ages, dyers made their yellows from a plant called dyer's weld, and their greens were made by overdyeing the yellow with blue woad. But weld fades, and after 700 years of hanging on castle walls, medieval tapestry forests tend to be misty blue, where once they were gaudy green. We can only imagine what the original works looked like, but they were probably surprisingly similar to the bright textiles of the 19th century that Morris was so passionately deriding as garish. This topic was so interesting to me, and it started me thinking about the idea of elusive color and chasing after a color. And I was wondering what for you, listeners, is the elusive color in your life. Maybe it's a color for a garment or yarn that you like to work with. Maybe you're looking for a paint color for a room in your home. Maybe it's even a nail polish color. I don't know, but it seems like folks who are sensitive to color or motivated or attracted to color often have this lifelong quest for the perfect shade. And, you know, there are lots of imitations, but you can't really substitute that perfect color with something else. I'm wondering what for you is that color? Or maybe there's a color that often surprises you, that you're attracted to it. Maybe against your better judgment. Sometimes, particularly with garments, there are colors that don't really flatter our skin tone or our hair color. Nevertheless, we love them and we're deeply attracted to them and we continue to wear them. So I'm wondering what that story is for you. What's your color story? What's your elusive color? How do you describe it? I think that the words, the adjectives, and the terms that people use to describe the colors they love are also very interesting. So I'd love to hear about it on the episode thread this week. Yarn Lover at Large. I've been forgetting to inform Yarns at Yanhu listeners that I will be taking a workshop at my LYS, Mountain Knits and Purls in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. This is a very well-stocked, friendly local yarn store. I enjoy going to sit and knit there. They have several different times a week where there is sit and knit, and I don't get to it nearly as often as I would like. And there are also extraordinary classes that are run by local knitters as well as other crafters. So Mountain Knits and Purls, P-E-A-R-L-S, is an indication that the store also stocks a fantastic selection of beads and things to make jewelry and other kinds of beaded gifts. So there are beading classes as well as knit and crochet classes. And many of those, as I said, are taught by locals that frequent the shop and are very skilled at what they do. And they offer classes based on skills or maybe based on a particular project. But the proprietor, Joanne, also invites well-known instructors and published designers to visit the shop and give classes. There was that fashion show with Maggie Jackson, all different kinds of things going on. And so in May, we found out that Kate Oates will be visiting in August, and there are two possibilities for workshops. The one I will be taking is on Saturday, August 22nd, from noon to 4. It's called Math for Hats, and Kate Oates goes through different possibilities for changing sizes or maybe even creating your own design for a hat and the math you need to know in order to do that. So I think that this will be a great addition to my, you know, very beginner skills as a designer and just thinking about math in a way that's helpful and sort of losing the attitude that math is intimidating. The more I work on designs of my own, yesterday I devoted a great deal of time to writing out the pattern for my most recent shawl design. And what's left to do is a lot of math because I'm committed to this idea, at least with the designs I've made so far, of having a percentage complete chart. And that requires quite a few calculations. And so rather than be intimidated by them, I'm kind of excited by the prospect of printing out what I have so far and of doing all of the calculations to figure out, you know, how many stitches per row and how many stitches for the entire garment or accessory. And then, you know, at what point will you be 10% completed with this? At what point will you be 90% completed with this project? So I'm really looking forward to the Math for Hats course and meeting Kate Oates. There were some incredibly seasoned knitters at the shop who were discussing some of the materials that would be used, and they were really impressed. So one woman said, you know, something about how she has been knitting for years and years and years, and she learned quite a few things from the materials that will be distributed. So she's really looking forward to the workshop. There's the Math for Hats, and then on the following day, the Sunday, there's also a class that has to do with sizing garments for growth, and it seems to be geared for knitting for children, but that's what these folks who had a glimpse of the materials were saying, that even though what will be discussed is, you know, sweaters for kids, you could really take these elements and apply them to any kind of garment knitting that you will be doing. It's highly transferable. So I'm really looking forward to this and to meeting Kate Oates. There's a little bit of brunch and meet and greet before the class, so we can all get to know each other, and then do the heavy lifting of some math for hats. I believe there are still spaces left in the workshop. I've put a link in the show notes to Mountain Knits and Purls. It's in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, as I mentioned. And so if you have the opportunity to join in, you should give the shop a call and see if you can score one of the openings in the class. And so forth. I was able to spend some time on sewing projects within the past week, and I made what will be the first of, I think, several versions of the staple dress by April Rhodes. I purchased this pattern in paper form, and I'm using a thin non-fusible interfacing to trace the pattern in a couple different sizes and iterations so that I can experiment with different shapes of the garment. It is quite a simple dress without sleeves, so it just has kind of a little bit of a T shape at the end, and the shoulder falls off of your shoulder so that it almost looks like a cap sleeve, but it's not a separate pattern piece. And then there is some elastic at the waist for shaping, and you can either sew this with a straight hem or with a scalloped hem. So I did a version with a scalloped hem. It has pockets, so I cut out pockets. I cut out the pockets so that the fabric is upside down, but I didn't cut them out again. Even though I had enough fabric, I figured, well, it's on the inside of the dress, so I'm just going to have upside down pockets in this dress. The fabric I used is a beautiful floral print on a dark blue background, designed by Sarah Watts. And I purchased this at Nido in Burlington, Vermont. And then I did the scalloped hem so that it's a drop hem, I suppose I should say, so that the front is much higher and the back extends down below my knee. Once I did the hem, the dress is a little bit shorter than I anticipated. It's not too short, but when I make this again, I definitely want to extend the hemline, and then I'd like to try another version at some point with just a straight hem. I bought elastic thread, which you wind onto your bobbin, and then this creates this elastic shirring at the waist. You can put one seam of elastic shirring, or you can put several. But this dress was fitted enough that I didn't put any elastic in the waist of the first version of this dress. Maybe I'll go back and do it. I don't know. But I just put this very wide belt at the waist, and it seems like it fits very well. So maybe I'm just avoiding the elastic. I don't know. On the next version, I will definitely make it a little bit wider so that I have a little more room to work with. Not necessarily wider at the top of the dress, because I really liked the way the top of the dress fits. I might add a few bust darts in my next version, but I will definitely extend the waistline so that it's like super roomy and wide, and then work on adding that elastic shirring into the waist. I've extended my pattern pieces at the waist so that the pockets will fall a little bit lower. I'm one of those folks with an incredibly long torso. So what is usually a natural waist on a dress is sometimes a little bit high for me. So I'll extend that down so the pockets are lower in the garment and see what happens. I have this amazing fabric that I think will be perfect for a transition from summer into fall, and will look great with some leather boots and maybe a leather belt. I'm really looking forward to doing some more sewing. I've also worked my way into a tunic pattern that I found in, I think it's Weekend Sewing by Heather Ross. This is a book I had received for Christmas with a number of patterns in it. And I cut out the pattern, I started sewing it, and then I realized I needed double fold bias tape, which I did not have. And then my attempt at picking some up at one of the fabric stores in town failed. They didn't have any in stock because they're in the process of relocating, and then the other store was about to close, so I didn't make it. So when I have all of the components for that, I hope to sew one of those tops, and then I have fabric for another. And this is kind of don't know. It almost looks like a caftan. It's like a very loose fitting tunic with a split top. There's facing in the front. There are some bust darts. And then I've added the design element, I suppose, of some mirrored facing in the sleeves. So there's like a split sleeve. I have a garment like this that I like a lot. And then I was thinking, because it's so loose, that I might add some ribbons into the side seams when I sew the side seams closed, so that I can tie the back and sort of pull it in a little bit so it's not so loose, so it has a little bit of a belt. So I'm looking forward to working on that. This coming week, I have some work to do at my school and not as much time for crafting. But following that, I should have some time to devote to sewing projects and also to figuring out the loom. I received the tip from Emily of the Fibertown podcast that Craftsy had a pretty good video about using a Cricut loom. And my particular interest is how to warp that loom. So when I went online to check for the class, it was on pretty deep discount. And that will be great because I can share that video with my student spinners and weavers, as well as watching it for myself. So I think that was a good investment. I've already watched one time, the part where the instructor warps the Cricut loom. And then when I'm ready to do it, I will watch that again. But I feel really confident that this video is going to help me out and that I can warp the loom, maybe use some of my hand spun to weave a sample scarf to show my students. And then we're all ready in the fall to get weaving on some of the projects they have in mind. They have some beautiful hand spun that I think will work well into a scarf or even just a flat piece of fabric that they could fold into a bag perhaps, or some kind of a pouch. So I really want to work out the kinks so that I feel confident once I'm working with the students. I've had it as a goal all summer to figure out this loom, and I still haven't had time to get to it. So that will be one of the things that I tackle before the summer ends and it's time for back to school.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, a bird out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
It's Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is So Wheat. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas. Performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page, joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Nature's herb will get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.